Well, hello, welcome to a bonus summer edition of the First Intuition podcast. Myself and Dave were messaging each other in the week, and Dave suggested, shall we catch up and record a session that we can release just to fill people in, really, on what's happening for us over the summer. So, good evening, Dave.
Evening, Ben. And what have you been up to over the last week since we last spoke?
It's that busy week for me in preparation for having 10 days off. So I've been trying to clear emails. I've been telling as many people as possible, I'm here for now. If you need anything, let me know. But then I'm away. I've been trying to brief the team on anything that might crop up in my absence. But I've loaded the van. For regular listeners, you will know that we bought a camper van during lockdown. And this is the first proper trip out. It is fully loaded. And we are setting off in the early hours of the morning to drive down to Cornwall.
That sounds like it's going to be amazing. Hopefully the weather holds out for you. Very similar for me. I go on holiday this Friday. So I am currently battling my inbox. I'm down to 15 emails left to deal with and left to finish. So if you are one of those 15, hopefully you'll get a response within the next day or so. We've got COVID tests to have before we can depart, but hopefully all being well, we'll be on a flight at about 6:30 on Friday morning to Madeira, so in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. And I've got a week where I'm intending to do mountain biking, canyoning, jumping off cliffs, hiking, climbing mountains, just getting away, doing loads of active stuff, taking my kids out for loads of adventurous type things. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Fantastic. Yeah, much deserved family time is what I'm looking forward to. And I know you are too, Dave. But you guys at Chelmsford have been mega busy recently. And you are speaking to me live from your new Chelmsford office, aren't you? How did the move go?
Well, the move is still in progress right now. So we took over the lease about a week or so ago. We had removal people came in on Monday. That was yesterday because we're talking on Tuesday. And they started moving things across yesterday. So we've got two fully furnished classrooms. The guys are still walking past the door that I can see at the moment, moving more desks into the other classes. We're hoping everything's going to be in today. But most exciting of all, we've got our first class in this centre tonight, this evening at 6:15. We've got an AAT class coming in. I'm going to be on duty outside the building, running between here and our old centre, just in case students are going to the wrong place or turning up and expecting us to be somewhere else. So really, really exciting to see people here. I'm hoping to get some photos up on social media when we get our class here. But I think the end of last week, it was a bit of sadness as we said goodbye to our old centre. It's been our home for 7 years. It was the first premises that we had down here. After kind of using hired meeting rooms and things like that. But it's a lot bigger. It's a lot fresher. It feels, yeah, it feels a bit more grown up than where we were before. So, yeah, really, really exciting times for us. And Ben, you're going to have to come down here soon.
Fantastic. I would love that. I did send your team a social media message in the week when there were some posts about farewell. I've only got fond memories of your previous Chelmsford office. And I had the pleasure to be invited to come down and teach a couple of classes for you down there. So who knows? Hopefully the invite will come to me at some point and I'll be able to come down and see you all and teach a class maybe in the new building.
You don't need an invitation, Ben. You're always welcome. So anytime you're passing, you can always knock on the door and come and see us.
So I suppose the other big thing that's happening over the summer is the Olympics. Regular listeners again will know that me and Dave are mega, mega big sports fans. What has captivated you? What has got you engrossed in the Olympics so far, Dave?
As you know, Ben, I am a massive Olympics fan. Every 4 years or 5 years in this case, when it comes around, I try and watch as much of the Olympics as I possibly can. I loved 2012 and saw, I went to, I think, two Olympic events during the Olympics there, which was just phenomenal. To me, the thing I love about the Olympics is every single athlete's got a story. And when you hear about some of those stories and what athletes have been through, that's the bit that to me either gets me a bit emotional or really inspires. And I think part of what's great about the Olympics is how it can inspire other people, either to inspire you to actually carry out that sport, to inspire you to actually try and go after your dreams, or just inspire you to change the way that you do things. And there are so many stories in there. So I know you're a fan, Ben. What are the things that you've enjoyed about the Olympics this year?
I really enjoy the fact my two daughters are loving it, and that they were literally toddlers when we took them to London for the Olympics there, and I don't think they can remember much about it. We've got fond memories of taking them. They've got pictures. I think the last Olympics, they were a bit more involved, but this time they are absolutely loving it. And the way that the time difference is working between us and Tokyo, they've been setting alarms at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning to wake up and watch swimming. They are fully engrossed in the hockey. They're both hockey players, so they've been loving the hockey, but also just the exploration of other sports. And we might mention some as we're having a chat in a moment, but they've been watching the taekwondo. They've really liked the football. We've been through watching the sailing this morning, a bit of windsurfing we were watching the other morning. And now we're onto the track and field, and it just keeps coming. I absolutely love it. There is never a boring moment when you switch on the telly because it's on and you can watch absolutely all of it and any of it.
I know that your daughters are big swimmers, and one of the frustrations for me about that timing was, as you said, the 2:30 alarm call for finals. But you also have the flip side of that. It's you wake up and you put the BBC on and you watch the BBC Olympic breakfast, and you've got news of all the stuff that's happened in the pool overnight. You watch all the highlights, and the UK or the GB swimming team have been phenomenal. I don't think there has been any Olympics in my lifetime where there has been quite so much British success in the pool. And it's something that, as a team, they just seem so united, which I absolutely love to see. But anyway, from your girls' perspective, as swimmers, how have they found that?
Absolutely loving it. And I think they're liking the fact it's relays. Club swimming is quite selfish, and a few people tend to dominate swimming galas. And it's really in the relays that the rest of the team get a chance to participate. And I think that's been summed up also by the Team G performance winning medals in the relay, to the point that some of the swimmers have sacrificed their individual aims just to be part of the relay team and fully focus on that.
Absolutely. It's James Guy. James Guy is the guy, because he is the guy who gave up his place in the individual butterfly, where based on form, he would have won a medal. And he did that in favour of competing in the mixed relay. And for me, that is the ultimate team sacrifice, giving up the chance of personal glory in order to win a competition for the team. And that was, for me, I think one of the greatest moments of that swimming gala altogether. And I think he deserves massive, massive credit for that. But I think it's also something that I think that, for some of our students, that's how great things happen. That's how great things happen in a sports team. It's how great things happen in the workplace, is when you don't just think about individual glory. You do think about what the team needs as a whole. And I've worked in places where you have certain characters who think it's all about them. And I'm going to characterise an entire type of worker, but I've worked in places where salespeople, you've got a sales rep who thinks they are the best salesperson in the world, and they go out for personal glory to hit massive sales targets. And as an accountant, I can see what they're doing is they're achieving their big sales targets by offering massive discounts and taking a hatchet to margins. And that could be really destructive to the whole. But when you get everyone firing in the same direction, that's when you get massive, massive rewards. So I took that as a huge example of something that's selfless, but ultimately the entire team benefited. So he's one of my heroes. I think it's impossible to say he is my hero, because there are so many heroes in the whole of the Olympics. But before we leave the pool and talk about other events, something I was so happy to see was Tom Daley winning his gold medal. So I don't know what your thoughts are about that at all, Ben.
The girls absolutely adore Tom Daley, and I think the nation adore him, don't they? He's kind of grown up in the spotlight. Such an interesting backstory. Sadly, I think he lost his father, didn't he?
Yeah.
Which is something I can resonate with, because I lost my dad a couple of years back. So that goes through your mind watching his story, thinking there must be a pang of sadness when he's now celebrating, but thinking, oh, my dad's not being able to see it. The biggest thing my wife loves about him is the fact that since he's got his gold, he's been staying on, and you've seen him in a couple of the other events. I don't quite know how he's been allowed to sneak back into the pool to watch some of the stuff, but he's been crocheting. Have you seen that on the telly, Dave?
Yeah,
he's a crochet knitter, which the girls, and particularly my wife, loves. I think he's crocheted a little holder for his gold medal.
No, I think you're absolutely right. We've seen him grow up, and that's what's so amazing about it. Is I think we all want him to win his gold medal, because we've seen him when he's like 12, 13, and he's a very precocious young man. We've seen him grow up, have disappointment. We've seen the heartbreak of losing his dad, and just to see him win the gold medal. And I think that his tears on the podium, and that there is that image of him that's kind of going around online where it's just, you can see his mask, you can see his eyes. It's obviously Tom Daley. You can just see the tears streaming down his face. Just tells you what it means, you know, what it means to him. And, you know, I will challenge anyone to having known what happened with him to actually keep a dry eye watching that medal ceremony afterwards. I just think, yes, so well deserved. And I know that everyone will tell me that every Olympic athlete has worked hard, has got a story. But for me, that was one that massively resonated. And I guess jumping out of the pool, you say your girls are hockey fans. What are their thoughts on the hockey team?
I've been absolutely loving it. And the fact that the ladies are outperforming the men again. Mm-hmm. They did it at the last Olympics. The men's GB team got eliminated in quite a tough game against India. But the ladies are still in the tournament as we're recording this. And I believe their semi-final is tomorrow. We'll be down in Cornwall by then. So I'm not sure where we'll be able to find to watch it or listen to it. But I'm sure we'll catch it, whether I have to put it on my phone on the iPlayer. But yeah, absolutely adoring the hockey and lots of role models. It is no surprise then to see my girls out in the back garden after a watching Team GB hockey match, with their rebound net just whacking hockey balls at it as hard as they can, trying to score from a penalty corner.
I love the fact that that you're right, things like penalty corner become, you know, language that everyone knows and everyone uses. And I'm a hockey player myself, my kids are hockey players. And one thing that I really hope is that this just increases the number of people taking up and playing hockey. It's something that after the last Olympics, when the GB team won the gold in the women's hockey as well, I just don't think enough was made of it that you know, hockey was a sport that's so inclusive. And if you have got kids, or even if you don't have kids and you want to take up playing hockey, get in touch with your local hockey club. I mean, at our club, we can lend you a hockey stick. You can come along for taster sessions. There are classes to get you into hockey if you've never, ever played before. And if it helps you, I played my first ever competitive game of hockey at the age of 42. So I'd never played hockey when I was young. The only reason I took up playing was because my kids had taken up playing hockey. And I said, my eldest son wanted to play men's hockey and was a bit scared of playing with people that are a lot bigger than him. So I said, well, how about I take up the game and then I can play with you? And so we've played together for the last couple of seasons, but it's so inclusive that, just get in touch with the local hockey club. They're bound to be having training sessions starting in the next couple of weeks for the next new season. And I'm sure they would love to see people there. But yeah, it is a fabulous sport and it deserves more people to go about playing it.
And something that's super exciting for listeners that are not hockey fans or have never watched a hockey match, you might be more used to football, where if there is a draw at the end of regular time and extra time, you go to a penalty shootout. Well, the equivalent in hockey is similar, but I think way better, that you don't just get a one-off penalty. You get 8 seconds, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, 8 seconds to dribble the ball and score one-on-one with the goalie. And it is captivating watch, and the GB ladies got through on a shootout, and I relished the next one because it was just a brilliant watch.
I think it's a fairer way of deciding it, and it's a less cruel way of deciding a game, because missing a penalty with one shot and that's it, you know, you've got no comeback. Whereas you've got that time, you've got the time to take it to the goalkeeper, to try and beat the goalkeeper, to try and go one way, to go another way, to get your shot off when you're ready. I think it's just a much fairer way of doing it. And I think if the goalkeeper pulls off an amazing save, then you congratulate the goalkeeper because, you know, you haven't been able to get past them. Whereas quite often in football, it's you miss a penalty, it's the striker's fault. And that's the person you automatically blame. But you don't get the same sort of thing when you have that time to try and score a goal. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
So one of the things I always love every Olympic year is the chance to watch a sport that I've never watched before or know very little about. We've talked about swimming and hockey, which are two sports that we are more familiar with. I'm going to say two more to you now, Dave, and see if you've been enjoying the BMX racing and BMX stunt riding and the taekwondo.
BMX riding, absolutely amazing. Absolutely loved it. I've loved waking up, and there have been two mornings I've woken up, and I've woken up to medals for the men and the women, gold medals for both of our lady riders. And again, you look at the stories that are there, and in the BMX, we had, was it Beth Shriver, who is an Essex girl, so in the same neck of the woods that I'm based in down here, and they had their government, their lottery funding cut for the BMX programs. They weren't getting any funding at all, and faced with that, Beth decided she needed to raise funds so that she could compete and continue her training. And she crowdfunded £50,000 worth of funds to enable her to carry on her training, to carry on competing. And then she comes to the Olympics and she wins a gold medal, which to me, that is just complete determination. That is not giving up on your dreams, not giving up on your goals, even when the chips are down. It's the equivalent that in a much smaller way, when our students suffer a setback, they fail an exam, or maybe the job that they're currently in is going through a round of redundancies and they find themselves redundant. And what do you do after that? And Beth didn't give up. She knew what she wanted to do. She thought, how can I raise the funds? She went through that kind of crowdfunding, which is really, really hard. So if anyone has tried to raise sponsorship funds for charity to run a marathon or something like that, that is tough. And there you might be talking about trying to raise £200-300. £50,000 to enable you to train, you know, that takes a hell of a lot of work. So massive, massive credit to her for doing that. And just when she crossed the line, I don't know if you saw this, Ben, but she crossed the line, she jumped off a bike and her leg stopped working because she'd just done everything she could to get over the line. And the lactic acid that had built up had just absolutely made her legs cramp up. She couldn't move. She had to be carried. Just utter determination and such a great story. So that was amazing. And did you watch the, I don't know, do you call it stunt riding or the freestyle? Did you watch the gold medal run for that?
I've seen it back. I didn't watch that one live. I did watch the BMX racing live. We were up ridiculously early in the morning in this house to watch that because the men's was first and then the ladies' final back to back. But the stunt riding, I've had a couple of people send me links of it to watch the flip back because I think it was the first time in competition someone had done a full 360 flip, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. The trick that I think was the second trick that she did had never, ever been performed before in any kind of competition like that. And yeah, just absolutely phenomenal. And again, one of those stories, all BMX funding had been cut, so she wasn't a funded athlete. She'd been working as a chef and then decided to throw it all in to really compete in the BMX. And just, yeah, follow your dreams, go for it, be determined, work hard. She achieved. And again, a huge inspiration. And I really hope the BMX team get some funding allocated to them now. I don't see how they cannot get funding given what they've achieved in this Olympics. And just, you know, you look at the skate parks that we've got around in the UK and the facilities that we've got for people to be able to do this sport. Little bit of money, little bit of funding, getting more kids involved in doing it. And we've got such a great sport there that it is so accessible to people because every inner city area in the UK has got a skate park, has got somewhere for people to do that. If we've then got the ability to, you know, buy a load of bikes so people can hire those bikes, get a bit of training, I think it's a massive, massive I think it made huge changes to people's lives. So yeah, phenomenal BMXing. And then the other sport you said, Taekwondo.
Yeah.
Did you watch the Taekwondo, Ben?
I've been watching, because that was early on, wasn't it? That was a few of the first medals. Yes, we watched quite a few of them, and it goes right down to the wire, doesn't it? The thing that me and the girls were loving about Taekwondo was you weren't decided. You could be 5 points up and still lose it all on the buzzer, effectively.
We had that with two of our athletes, both of them. It was final seconds just ticking away, and then they got hit late, and that just gave the opposition enough points to win it. And I think there were two athletes that we had that both won a silver medal, or maybe it was the bronze medal match, but I think it was the silver medal match, actually. And there was a guy very early on who got silver, having been knocked out in those circumstances. Then there was the lady that everyone refers to as Queen Bee, who I think was Bianca. And she had a very similar thing happen that meant that she ended up with winning a silver medal. And the thing that I found telling, or not telling, but the thing that made me really think was when both of them were interviewed afterwards, they both said very different things. And the male athlete was very much, very disappointed, as you would be because you haven't won the gold medal and you were in the position to do so. And referred to his medal as being, the first loser medal, and saying that, it's not gold, so it's nothing. And the lady, Bianca, she was just, overjoyed when she was interviewed afterwards, even though everyone was tipping her for the gold medal and you could have been very disappointed, but she seemed to be more focused on what this could do to inspire other people, what winning a silver medal could do to other people, and how it could drive people to a sport that she loves. And I absolutely love that attitude. And I think sometimes we get that with our students, don't we? Where, I'm really disappointed I only got 55%. I'm disappointed because I didn't win the prize. Whereas, we all know that just because you win a prize doesn't make you a great accountant or a great colleague or, a great person to work with. And we should really be focusing on, on what makes us great people to work with rather than, have we won a prize? So they were the things that struck me with Taekwondo. What other sports, Ben? We seem to have gone through quite a lot of them.
I love the fact that you get behind the sport itself to get the backstory of the person. I love all of their interviews pre and post to talk about the preparation. And I'm always like you, trying to relate that back to things either in my own life or things that we see with students. One of the ones that really captured me was Max Whitlock, the gymnast, because he got another gold medal, which I think was slightly unexpected. He's a great gymnast, but I don't think he was tipped to win gold. And he really struck me in his post-routine interview where he said he really had to change his approach. And it got me thinking to students need to think about an approach for an exam. And he had to change it this time because I wasn't aware of this. We become experts in all kinds of sports during the Olympics, don't we? But he was first on the floor to do his performance. And when you're first for your routine, you want to set a bar that other people have to follow. And in gymnastics, you can flex your routine for different levels of difficulty, and that has an impact on your score. So you can say, if I know I only need to score this much, I might deliberately pick an easier, lower difficulty routine just to get higher marks in the actual performance of it. And he went first and said, I couldn't follow what other people had done, which I think is a position he'd been in the past. So he had to go out. He picked the hardest difficulty routine, saying, I wanted to set the highest score possible. And he pulled it off and set a really high score that no one else could then beat when they went after him. So I really like all of that, that the kind of planning behind it and the tactics individually or in a team sport that you need to prepare and then actually follow through on.
Yeah, I agree. And it is so hard, isn't it, to go first. You always, in those kind of competitions, I always think you want to go last. You want to know what you're aiming at. And then you can choose your approach to take that thing down. Whereas you don't know what someone else has got in their locker. So you go absolutely all out and you really do risk everything falling apart. And he did amazingly well. And again, Max Whitlock, as I know he's originally from somewhere, originally from Hertfordshire, I think, but as you know, trains in Essex, so I'm going to take that as an Essex gold medal that we've achieved there. So Essex doing rather well in the medal table. so far. But yeah, I think what's something I want to talk about with Max Whitlock a bit later on as well. But to me, that was amazing. Other things that struck me is I'm really enjoying the boxing. The boxing is the one sport that really goes over the entirety of the Olympics. So it starts virtually at the beginning, finishes virtually at the end, because you've got to have all of those, you know, you can't have a fight one day, a fight the next day, a fight the next day, because it would be really dangerous. So you have to have that separation between each round. So it is the sport that goes across all of it. And there is something about the fact that it's three rounds. It's not, you know, it's not kind of like a professional bout. And it's scored. You see the scores at the end of each round, which you don't always in professional boxing. And you know, the fact that British boxers are doing really well. And again, it's, you always get the stories about how you know, boxing has changed people's lives. We saw it with Anthony Joshua, where when he came into the Olympic setup, when he came into a boxing gym, you know, he felt his life could have gone one of two ways. And it's almost like a sliding doors moment. He went into the gym and his life changed in that respect, but he could have gone a different path. And I think there's a lot of stories like that we see in boxing. So I've really enjoyed that. And again, every single person has got their own story within that boxing thing. And then I guess before we look at something a bit kind of that encompasses all of it, probably my favourite non-GB moment of the Olympic Games was in the high jump final. So did you watch the high jump final?
Did watch the high jump final. It was very, very close and tied at the top, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And this is something that if you look on social media, and particularly if you look on Twitter, which I go on Twitter a fair amount to see what people are saying, there was a lot of negative comments about what happened in that high jump event. So for those of you that didn't see it, we had the entire high jump event kind of goes through, the pole gets raised and you get your chance to attempt at various different heights. And as people fail on heights, they gradually get knocked out. And you had two jumpers left, a guy from Bahrain and a guy from Italy. And they both had exactly the same record. They jumped the same height, they failed at the same points in time. And they were sitting there and both of them had failed their three attempts. So they both, the highest height that they jumped was the same. They had the same record underneath. And at that point in time, they were offered the opportunity to share the gold medal and say, look, you know, you guys, we can't separate you. We could have what we got, a jump off and start lowering the bar, but you've got the opportunity to share the gold medal. And I was so happy they did. And I know there's been so much comment about how this is against the spirit of the Olympics and how you've got to have a winner. You can't have two people winning. And people say, oh, why don't you just give everyone a gold medal? But when I look at that, I look at two athletes that have been competing for upwards of 2 hours, that have measure for measure been able to do exactly the same thing, and they both failed at the same point. Now, I don't really want to see those two athletes start to go down until someone fails at a lower height. They've already proven that they can jump as high as each other and they can't jump any higher. I think in that situation, 100%, you give them both the gold medal. And I think it was a beautiful moment. And it was, you know, true sportsmanship that they both sat there and said, look, we're not going to beat each other. And this is the best way to do it. And you know, I know there are some sports where some sports people that would have sat there and said, no, I want to win the gold medal. You know, I'm going to do whatever I can, even if it means, you know, jumping in 8 hours time. But that's not sport. That's not proving you can do it at an elite level. That's just, you know, that's almost torturing people into submission, which I don't particularly like. So for everyone out there that has criticised that decision, I just think you're wholeheartedly wrong. I don't know, Ben, you might criticise the decision, tell me that I'm wrong.
I think just looking at the two athletes concerned and their embracing each other, the sheer excitement of both of them having a gold medal, the fact that I think they have competed together for many, many years and have not been known as overly successful in their particular field, just the sheer joy of getting a gold medal and sharing it with someone that I think they would probably say was a mate on the athletic circuit, I think was phenomenal. And I love watching it. And I've got no time for anyone that says it was compromising and it wasn't competitive sport.
And the thing that, did you see afterwards, the Italian won the 100 metres at the 100 meters, and then came and embraced his fellow athlete, the high jumper. And it reminded me of that Super Saturday at London 2012 when Mo Farah won and Greg Rutherford won and Jess Ennis won. And you know, there was that huge celebration of one country just being amazing on the track. And to me, I just thought, bet the Italians are feeling something like that right now, you know, watching that and thinking, oh, we've just won that medal, we've won that medal. And yeah, it is amazing. It was an amazing feeling for us. I was actually at the Olympic Stadium on that evening, and it was phenomenal being there live. I know for everyone that watched it, it was amazing. And you know, I hope that the Italian audience got as much out of it as we did in the UK when it happened in 2012.
And obviously they'd won the European football just before. So Italy having a stellar summer of sport. But you mentioned something there about Super Saturday and obviously atmosphere in the stadium. This game is completely different because the stadiums are empty. The big thing I've really liked seeing on the telly, though, are the athletes' friends and family back home supporting them. I don't know if you saw the big garden party that Tom Dean's swimmer, his family were having a massive garden party at 2 a.m, and then he won his gold medal. I've really liked the involvement of people's children. A lot of the athletes, and I think there has been much more made of the fact that some of the athletes are mums and dads. So it was lovely to see Tom Daley go back to his partner and his young son. We had in the rowing, didn't we? Someone that my girls love because they know her famous husband, Steve Bagshaw, the guy that does the animal programs on the telly. But his wife, Helen Glover, was rowing, and they've got a really young family. And I saw the pictures of her getting back to the airport and the young kids coming up and giving her a massive hug. And I've really liked the fact that people's families, although they haven't been able to go to Japan to support them, have been at home and have been thoroughly enjoying cheering them on.
Yeah, it's been great, hasn't it? And yeah, those pictures of people in gardens, in marquees, in the middle of the night, celebrating. And the swimming has all been, the medal races have all been in the early hours of the morning. So it has been in pitch darkness outside, you know, everyone watching it. And the celebrations are phenomenal. And you're seeing it everywhere. You're seeing it all around the country. You're seeing it at BMX clubs, at velodromes. You're seeing it at athletics clubs, at hockey clubs. Everywhere across the UK, people getting together to celebrate. And it is a shame that there aren't people in the stadium. But I always think there's something quite nice about the footage when you see, you know, people diving, people swimming, people boxing, people fighting in taekwondo, where they do pan the camera around and you see the rest of their team watching. And I think it's something that you don't always think of, but you know, they are a team. They are working together. They are all supporting each other. So again, that's something that I think is great about this Olympic team, is how much they're supporting each other. But I think we've got...
I always love the name checks back to sports coaches that they had in their youth and PE teachers. I really think that's a nice touch. Did you see that the two young, I'm going to pronounce their surname wrong now, Gadarova twins, the two twin girls that won the bronze medal in the gymnastics yesterday? Yeah. They're waiting for their GCSE results, and their PE master was on the telly being interviewed, saying that he hopes they get good results in GCSE PE. Maybe they should just give them the top grade now for qualifying.
Yeah, I don't see how can you not give them kind of a grade 9 if they have been in Olympic finals. You know, surely that makes a mockery of the GCSE system if someone can't get a top grade and yet they're an Olympian.
But it's not been all celebrations. There have been, as there always are at the Olympics, some sad stories and some other reflections. I think on the track particularly, a couple of bits struck me. Adam Jamili, who was tipped to have a good chance of a medal in the 200 metre sprint, and sadly he pulled a hamstring in the warm-up and tried to compete, but pulled up very, very quickly. And he was in floods of tears being interviewed. And you just think of the amount of preparation, the amount of work put into preparing yourself, made me reflect on students when they've put in all of the hours, all of the prep, done exactly what their tutors at FI have told them to do. And then on the day of the exam, something means they can't sit for whatever reason, a computer crash that we've had recently for some of our students. And then the other one that caught my eye also on the track was the disqualification of Zarnow Hughes, our 100 meter sprinter in the final. And he false started. And you're thinking there about the amount of practice he must have had, and still on the day with all of that pressure, it went wrong. And that shows that these athletes are only human. Things go wrong, don't they? Our students will mess up. They will do stuff wrong in exams because it's human nature, I'm afraid. It's how they come back. It's how they deal with it from now. And I've been reassured. They've been talking lots on the TV coverage about the support they get from the team, from teammates, from coaches within the team. And something I know you wanted to touch on was the whole mental health and well-being that's been fully promoted at these games.
Yeah, I've become aware really over the course of this Olympics of how many athletes have talked about their own well-being. So I think Tom Daly in the past has been very, very open about struggles that he's had. But when you look at Adam Peaty, I love watching him compete. He comes out like a boxer. He stares down the opposition. You know, he's got that kind of that, you know, almost kind of animalistic, you know, kind of like really holding back some kind of violent rage before he gets into the pool. When he finishes, you know, you can see how much it means to him and how he's, you know, he tenses his muscles up and he's almost like he's caged up and he's trying to escape. And then in the post-swim interviews, he talks about how now he's got his Olympic gold, he's going to be focusing on his well-being. That's what he's going to focus on, is making sure that mentally he's okay. Max Whitlock, I think that, you know, we talked before and he said that he was, after the last Olympics, he took months away from gymnastics to make sure that, you know, mentally he was okay. We saw Simone Biles dropping out of Olympic events because she didn't feel that she was in a position to actually be able to compete. You know, and you know, with the Olympics, that's such a sensible thing to do. If you're on the parallel bars and, you know, you're not in the right frame of mind, you can do yourself life-changing injuries, you know, if you're not doing things in the correct way. So, you know, really sensible player to do that, but really refreshing for people to talk about that. And if you go back to when we were younger then, so yeah, 20 odd years ago, when people didn't talk about mental health, they didn't talk about well-being, we still saw it with sports people. You know, but we would call it something different. So you know, when we saw, you know, golfers that were brilliant and then suddenly forgot how to drive the ball straight or forgot how to putt, you know, and a lot of those golfers, you speak to them now, will say, mentally I was shot, mentally I was gone. You know, I didn't know how to cope with a failure that I'd had, and that just haunted me through the rest of my career. We see, you know, in things like the fight game, in boxing, you know, we see boxers that are unstoppable until someone lands a big punch on them and knocks them down, and suddenly we say they've been found out or they've lost their nerve. But the reality is they haven't been able to process and cope with those kind of situations. How many footballers used to take penalties and stopped at 25 because they missed an important one? You know, I've known of strikers that will refuse to take penalties because they mentally they cannot cope with putting themselves through that pressure. And I think that it's something that we're more aware of now. And I'm so glad people are talking about it, because our students face this. Because when you sit an exam and you've been unsuccessful, and you need to go back and do that again, it's so hard to put yourself in that position again. So it's something I'm so happy that people are talking about. And I'm so, and I think that, you know, taking that break, taking time away, it's one of the reasons why I was desperate to go on holiday, is because I need a chance to recharge. And I'm sure you do as well, Ben. But yeah, really refreshing. And then we saw Ben Stokes, you know, a cricketer who absolutely has it all in the game of cricket. He's one of, if not the best cricketer on the planet. And yet he's sitting there saying, look, I need to look after myself. And I think that if someone at that level, with that perceived level of success and ability, is prepared to do that, I think we should all take note of that and say, well, maybe I'm not doing as well as I should be, and I need to do something about it. So what did you think? You know, was there anything I missed there that you'd like to talk about?
I agree 100%. I think you're exactly right. I think there's a couple of bits from my perspective. One, I think this is the first time that it really is the elite, the top of the game sportsmen and women that are doing it. Simone Biles is clearly the best gymnast in the world going into these games. And she has had to say, I need to step away. I can't perform. I am not right. And that opens up the challenges. And I've seen debate on social media, but surely she's the best in the world. She needs to pull herself together and get out there and perform. And that's not it. That's exactly not it. And I've been really, really pleased with the punditry on the television that have come out and wholeheartedly supported that decision. And I think it echoes back into our own lives. Just because you are successful, you are seen to be good or the best at your job, you're earning good money, doesn't mean that these things won't come out and hit you. And I think in those situations, you're probably more likely to stay in the game too long. And she's taken the bravest decision, sacrificing medals that I think she was on to win, by stepping away and saying, I am not in the right position to perform. The second thing, and I still don't think we're quite there, but there seems to be more parity between mental health injury and physical injury. I've already mentioned Adam Jamili, and it is obvious to anybody when a 200 meter sprinter can't make it beyond 20 meters without basically collapsing and can't walk. And we had Andy Murray pull out of the singles. He still played in the doubles, but clearly he's carrying lots of injuries and his body just can't perform. And I think historically, physical injuries, nobody questions. Mental injuries or mental wellness to perform has always been not visible initially. And I think this is the first games I can remember where people are talking about it. I don't think we're quite at a parity, but people have been given recognition for their mental health, their mental well-being as a reason they can't perform, as well as their physical conditioning. So I think it's all movements in the right direction. And let's hope this continues to get people talking. It's got me and you talking about it. If people listening to this can go and talk about it, the more of us that talk about it, the better it will be for everybody.
Yeah, I agree. And it's getting help when you need it. We know elite sports people have got access to, the world's best, sports psychologists and, people that will work with them mentally, but it still doesn't stop them getting sick. Now, it still doesn't prevent them from getting sick and needing to get additional help. And I think that's something that, that we all should take a look at and just make sure that we're all, we're all doing okay. And if we're not doing okay, putting our hands up and saying, look, I need help. And, we've spoken about it before. There is help out there, but it's a very brave thing to put your hand up and say that you need help. And I think we should all be encouraged to do that if we do.
It really is. And the stigma that you feel you're letting other people down. And Simone Biles did it in the team event for the gymnastics. Justification being that actually they could sub her, and they did. They replaced her with someone else to finish the competition, because her feeling was, I am not going to help this team in any way, shape or form. And I think that's actually something we all need to think about. I would imagine you're the same as me, Dave. Sometimes we think we just need to get on with it because there are other people around us that need us. Mm-hmm. And actually, that's the wrong way to think about it. I think we probably do more damage to our teams by staying on for that bit too long than actually acknowledging, look, guys, I need to step back. I need some help here. Can someone else come and fill in for me?
Yeah, I agree. And it's again one of those things that in the Twitterverse, that there are people that I've seen comments about athletes that have pulled out for mental health reasons, for non-physical injury reasons, that have talked about, they've taken a space away from another athlete, and you wouldn't say that if someone broke their leg. You wouldn't say that at all. If someone had been involved in a car crash on the way to the hotel in the Olympic Village, you would never for a moment have said, oh, that's stupid. They've taken away a place from someone else. No one intends to get injured. No one intends to get hurt. No one wants to suffer from those things. But when they happen, you need to deal with them. And if you qualified as the best athlete in your class, you don't know that you're going to suffer a breakdown of some kind, in 6, 9, 12 months' time. And in some of these athletes, it's 2 years from qualifying to actually get into the games. So, I think it's ridiculous to say, oh, they should have known, they should have dropped out before they went to the Olympics, let someone else have a chance. Did they know? I don't think they did. I don't think anyone, I don't think anyone would be sitting there saying, oh, yeah, I've been harbouring the secret for the last 3 months, but I've still pushed ahead and gone to the Olympics. It just wouldn't have happened. So I think that there are people that I think really need to take a look at you know, what these situations are, and actually treat them with a bit of sympathy. Twitter is a very toxic place sometimes when you look at the comments that are being levied at people. I think that, you know, a bit of understanding and a bit of kindness goes a long way.
Yeah, 100%. Well, we are up for time again. I know you've got to go and start helping set up for the evening classes.
I do.
I've got to finish packing the last few bits into the camper van. Enjoy the rest of the games. We've still got a few days of competition to come. And yep. I guess, knowing you, Dave, your mind will be focusing now on 3 years' time when the Olympics is in Paris and thinking, yep, that's an easy one for me, the family, to maybe try and get some tickets and hop
absolutely
up in a challenge.
I am desperate to go to Paris. But Ben, one thing that I'm going to put you on the spot here, Ben. Are you going to come to the Olympic Velodrome in a couple of weeks' time? And are you going to put down a flying lap and see if you can beat any of the members of FI that are going there?
Oh, Dave, I saw, I'm actually on leave, but I did see your message pop up in our internal social media kind of messenger channel. It doesn't appeal to me. If this is going to surprise you, I'll come and watch. I'd love to come and watch the Velodrome, but... Yeah. I don't think I've got the guts to go round on the indoor velodrome on a bike. I'm not sure I could do it. I really don't.
I'm signed up already. I'm there. I just want to bag it as another Olympic venue I've done stuff in. So, I, as you know, I've been whitewater rafting at the Olympic Aquatic Centre. I've played hockey at the Olympic Hockey Stadium. And this will be my next stadium that I will have actually done some kind of activity at. So I was hoping that you come along. But if you're going to come and view, you can be the timekeeper then.
I'll come and view. If the BMX track is open, I wouldn't mind doing that.
BMX swimming club.
There. The girls' swimming club got invited to go and swim in the Olympic pool, which was a cool day out. But yeah, I'll do BMXing outside. Just the
awesome.
Velodrome doesn't fill me with excitement.
I will book the BMXing, and we will do BMXing one weekend or after work. Because you can do that. You can hire a BMX down there, hire all the equipment you need. We can get ourselves a place on the track and we can go for it.
Fantastic. Fantastic. We'll get some pictures for the FI social media. Well, have a lovely holiday, Dave, if I don't speak to you beforehand. And I'm sure we'll catch up as soon as we're both back to fill people in on the second half of our summer holiday. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for downloading. We will be back with the live format student forums back in the autumn, but hopefully we'll get in at least one more bonus episode to update people on what's happening over the summer.
So thanks for joining me, Ben. And yeah, thanks for everyone out there that's listening. We'll see you all soon.